Welcome to the Anime That Didn't Make Us, a podcast about anime that we could have been nostalgic for, if not for the curse of geography. I'm Brian Smith.
I'm Gary Hedges.
And today, we are joined by the third chair himself, Dwayne Maloney.
I didn't even wait to be third chair, I'm fucking introducing myself straight away. Rude.
And for this, our 23rd episode, we're going to be talking about three shows, Mapletown, Future GPX Cyber Formula, and Tekkaman Blade, which is the correct order, not the order I wrote them on the notes, because I got the last two flipped in my head as to which order they came in. For some reason, I thought Cyber Formula was a 1994 show, which I guess there was still some Cyber Formula coming out in 1994, but not the main series.
Yeah, there was like, God, was it like two or three spin-offs from that? I'm not sure.
We'll get to how many spin-offs there were.
Yeah.
Talk about that down the line. But first, as always, it's my choice, because I'm so very old. It is Mapletown Stories. Launched in 1985 by Japanese games and toy company Epoch, Sylvanian families as a toy line of flopped plastic figures of clothed anthropomorphic animals living an idealized North European lifestyle. Wanting some of that action, Bandai and the American toy company Tonka launched a rival brand with the release of the 1986 anime series Mapletown Stories. It is set in the fictional 1920s Canadian town of Mapletown, where it follows the adventures of Patty Hope Rabbit and her friends. And it ran for 52 episodes and was followed by a sequel series, New Mapletown Stories, Palm Town Chapter, where I think they moved to LA or something. Basically, it's an entirely new cast apart from the Hope Rabbit family, but I think occasionally previous characters will show up as guest characters. But we'll get to that when someone eventually picks that. Because I do have the first episode of that as well, I believe. In fact, I think there's a lot of episodes have been fan-subbed of that. The series was dubbed into English in 1987 for the US market, and according to videocollector.co.uk, two tapes were released on VHS here in the UK in 1988, Welcome to Mapletown and The Prettiest Dress in Mapletown. So 88 puts it outside my 11-year-old window, so therefore it is still a viable pick. Even though it did eventually come here, it was not when I would have appreciated it. I'm pretty sure by the time I was 13, I would have not been down with watching Mapletown. Probably when I was 18, I'd be perfectly fine, but 13, no. Original air date for this was Sunday, January the 19th, 1986, when I would have been 10 years old. Gary, how old were you, 1986?
In January? I would have been January 1986. I'd have still been five.
Dwayne?
Three.
Tiny, tiny baby.
But at least you
probably
were born.
Would have watched
how,
it.
How many, I was going to say, how many guests have we had on that have been like, oh, I wasn't around then?
Yeah, most of the time, yes. It's been not born. No.
I understand that I'm still old by most people's comparison. Yeah.
So, I was not watching this. I was watching these things, I guess. It's a Sunday, so as we've learnt, barren wasteland of television in my childhood. BBC One, I would have probably have watched a couple of Bugs Bunny cartoons they had on in the middle of the day. They had Baseball Bugs and Hair Conditioned. I think I know Baseball Bugs. I'm not
That's
sure.
That's the one where he plays the whole team, yeah.
I think, yeah. Hair Conditioned. 1945, so probably good. A Bugs is revealed to be on display in Stacy's department store window, helping to advertise camping gear. I guess it was playing on air-conditioned department stores at the time.
Oh, see, when you said hair-conditioned, I was thinking that one where he was like a barber. And I think that's a different thing.
Yeah, it looks like him versus the manager of this department store. Don't recall this one at all. And then later in the evening, I would have enjoyed watching Heidi High, the sitcom set in the 1950s. What would you call them?
Holiday camp.
Holiday camp, that's the word. I never went to a holiday camp. I was going to say caravan park, because that's where we went. where you had to make your own amusement. That's not true. I think we did have like a donkey. I remember going to a donkey derby at a caravan park. No, it wasn't. That wasn't a caravan park. That was a chalet park. But yeah, nothing.
Oh yeah, yeah, the small house. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Nothing of this of the sort of organized fun that I would have not enjoyed. On 1960, apparently, it was set in this particular episode. On BBC Two, I definitely would have watched Windmill, which was this show, which was basically just a library program. It was just clips of stuff from the BBC library.
It wasn't the pink windmill.
No, it was not the pink windmill with Rod Hull and Emu.
So stock footage of the show?
Sort of, yeah. So, but there'd be a theme. There'd be a theme. Oh. I suspect this is very much an influence on all my panels I run. Conventions.
Okay.
Between this and Tony Robinson's Stay Tuned, I think these may be the two. So this one is apparently Chris Searle takes a dip into water to look at the BBC film and videotape library. So we get Albert Steptoe and Steptoe and Son taking a bath, Paddington doing Singing in the Rain, and a man water walking across the Thames. Oh, they had interview stuff as well, because they're interviewing Ernie Wise about the Singing in the Rain sketch from Morecambe and Wise show. A lot of it was comedy things. That was the other thing, which is okay. Why I would have highly enjoyed it. ITV, I've only got the London weekend television things, so Gary probably would be able to see this. I would have not.
Yeah.
Wake Up London with the Vicious Boys again.
Yep, I always watch that.
Turns out the thing which was written as Woodyard Friends in the previous one episode was actually Woody and Friends.
Oh.
Which I guess was a Woody Woodpecker cartoon of some kind.
Yeah, I assume so. I must admit, I was never a big fan of Woody Woodpecker, even as a kid. So I would have turned off that if there was anything else on better, and I would have settled on it if there was nothing else better.
Yeah, I never liked Woody Woodpecker. What's the line from Seinfeld? He's an instigator. and of course, David Lynch fell out with that soft toy Woody Woodpecker that he had.
Free, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's lots of, yeah. Snooper and Blabber, I believe that's a Hanna-Barbera cartoon.
Doesn't ring any bells.
I think they're like a detective cat and a detective mouse. I think I've only ever encountered them when they later showed up in Yogi's Treasure Hunt.
Okay.
Super Snooper and Blabber Mouse. There they go. Then in the afternoon, you could have watched the Smurfs.
At five, I would have definitely still been a big Smurfs fan.
Joni Loves Chachin.
Smurfs fan.
One of the Happy Days spin-offs. And then in the evening, you could have watched Bullseye. If I was round to grandparents, I would have been watching Bullseye. Catchphrase. Surprise, surprise. Which
it's
I think...
still here.
Yeah, I think if I was at my mum's, that would have been on. I did not care for Surprise, Surprise or Cilla Black. And then at 9:15, Crazy Like a Fox, which I've watched... I managed to get hold of the first season while during this pandemic of Crazy Like a Fox. Crazy Like a Fox is an excellent show. And if someone could find me the second season and send it to me, I would greatly appreciate it, because it's not available to officially purchase anywhere. It's a detective show with Jack Warden playing the elder fox. So he's a private detective and his son's a lawyer. And the gimmick is that he keeps on dragging his son into helping him on various cases. It's a very well-done comedic detective show. Of which there was lots of these like old man, young man pairings around this time. And I think this is the best one.
Like, what could be more embarrassing than solving crimes with your dad?
Exactly, yes. The opening credits always has him ringing up the son and saying, what's the worst that could happen? And then the rest of the episode is that worst thing happening. Like, there's one where they go camping, they go off camping, and he thinks that he's seen another camper murder his wife. And that completely ruined. So they end up going to, this is while they're following a camper van on the road. And so rather than go to the really nice camp that they were meant to go to, he forces them to follow this other camper van to a much dodgier campsite and completely ruins the entire family's holiday because he's trying to figure out whether this guy murdered his wife or not. And then Spitting Image in the evening, which, as I've said before, it would be this thing that I would admire from a distance but never actually allowed to watch at this age.
Hmm.
And there was nothing of interest on Channel 4. The UK number one was The Sun Always Shines on TV by A-ha, which I'd forgotten how great the intro to that is because the intro sounds like it's the end of an entirely different song. And then it suddenly picks up. And the Irish number one was The Walk of Life by Dire Straits.
Oh.
Which
I'll listen to that.
I think I would have listened to that at the time, but then I went back and listened to it today, and I was like, oh no, I'm right in my general opinion that Dire Straits are not for me.
Okay.
Fair enough.
God damn, I've not written the episode title down of this Mapletown cartoon. It's all right, I've got the Anime News Network encyclopedia open. Let me look it up. Got every other detail written down about it. But 52 titles. Episode 1 is Welcome to Mapletown. There we go. I should have guessed because it was the name of one of those VHS tapes. So then episode 1 is Welcome to Mapletown. It is directed by Junichi Sato, the guy who would go on to become famous for directing Sailor Moon and then many, many other things alongside that. The original concept and screenplay is by Shifude Asakura, known for Hello Spank, Hello Lady Lynn, and Lady Georgie.
Is that long-running series of things with Lady in the name, yeah?
That was the graphic I put up on Twitter a week or so
ago. Yeah, that did amuse me as well.
Which I'd made the graphic, and then I hadn't like made the graphic for that tweet. I'd made the graphic, and then I was like, what the fuck do I do with this graphic? And because I was trying to figure out whether there was like a massive connection between all these shows with Lady in the title. And I think there is obviously some staff connection, but not a massive staff. And there's no connection between Hello Spank and Hello Lady Lynn. Because Hello Lady Lynn is the sequel to Lady Lady, whereas Hello Spank is about a dog.
Did one of the ladies die in the original Lady Lady? They were only left with Lady Lynn.
No, I don't know. I don't know why. I think the actual manga's just called Lady, and they called it Lady Lady for the anime for some reason. The character design is by Sunio Ninomiya, who also did the character design for Sonic the Movie. Another.
Presumably the original, not the recent.
Yes, the OVA, yes.
God, yeah.
Obviously, less clothes had to be designed in that one than we'd got here. For Mapletown. And it stars Maya Okamoto as Patty, the voice of Psycho Yuki in Silent Mobius. Bobby is voiced by Yoku Shioya, the voice of Jinpei the Swallow from Gatchaman. And our villain, Gretel, is played by Yusaku Yara, the narrator of Legend of the Galactic Heroes, and the voice of the 90s version of Senbei Noromaki in Dr. Slump. And our opening theme and ending theme are by Satoko Yamano, who is also the voice actress in this. She plays the voice of Puraprin the Pig, a pig I missed when I was doing anime's top pigs as one of my panels.
I think I missed that pig in this episode.
I don't think she's in this episode. She may just be in the background.
Okay.
And the other song she's provided... The other shows she's provided songs for have been Dorimon, where she did the 1989 version of Dorimon's song, which I think lasted till 2004, for The Wizard of Oz, and Topo Gigio. And yeah, our theme song is Mapletown Monogatari, and ending theme is Patty no Nichiyubi. And let me tell you what happened in this cartoon as soon as I find. There we go. So we get a night. The opening has a nice open on our rabbit heroine, and then we get a jolly parade of animals chasing a falling star with a face that crashes into the planet, which causes the town to grow. And they basically trying to get us to come on down to Mapletown. And it is a town for animals, it's described as, which suggests that somewhere in this world there are other towns where animals are not welcome. And as I was watching this, I was like, oh, we should really have picked this on an episode Aaron was on, because it's set in Canada and there's a train in it. I was like, really wasted on Dwayne.
Sorry.
That's fine. the train is being run by monkeys. I was a little unsure of the scale of them, but I think it made it clear that the monkeys are of the same scale as the rest of the animals. And we see there's like a cool windmill is the centerpiece of the town. It's kind of like a windmill built out of a tree. It's the main thing we see like growing in the opening credits. And we see an elderly mare lion is boring the pants off an elderly monkey about these rabbits who are coming to town. And this is where we get the exposition that the town has been peaceful for 200 years and the daddy rabbit is coming along to become the new postmaster. Meanwhile, I think like the older sister of the rabbit family is telling Patty to be more ladylike, and she does not want to be more ladylike. She wants to get her candy. She's got one bit of candy left and she wants to eat it. And then the train is held up by a bandit who I believe is a wolf. I think they eventually confirm that later on.
Well, he lives in the wolf's woods, so probably, right?
Yeah, it's just his tail looks like it's seen better days.
I thought it was a stick in his belt for ages until I... Oh, wait, that's his tail. Okay.
Yes.
When I saw his face, I thought it was a badger first.
Yeah, I could see that.
I thought it might have been a weasel.
Yeah, or a weasel, actually.
He's the one with more, like, I guess, human-like proportions, because he has, like, gangly arms and legs.
He looks like he's come from a different part of the country than all these other animals. It looks like there's not a toy of this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, my very next line is, this guy has a totally different design to all the other animals.
Right.
Lord Gretel is his name. And the police get a call about this hijacking. The policeman is a bulldog. And he's followed by a nosy fox lady. How do we learn that he's afraid of words, or he doesn't like words?
That when he's asking for your valuables,
oh, that's it.
Put them in the bag. The little kid's like, "Here, take my
book."
Was it like a storybook or a coloring book?
Yeah,
it was this precious book, storybook.
It was a limited worded child's book, and he was disgusted by this. Yeah.
Fearful of it.
This is foreshadowing. Then later on, then he tries to steal Patty's candy, and she is not having any of this. How dare you try and steal my candy? And they go in like a little energetic chase around the inside the carriage. And this leads him to spotting the post that Daddy Rabbit has hidden under the seat in the train. And because it's been hidden, he thinks that it's more valuable. And so he gives all the money and all the other belongings back because...
Story.
This bag is surely worth more than all of that stuff. So, and then he runs off with that. Then at this point, the bulldog and the fox is Mrs. Conderick. And she starts to, she tries to make Daddy Rabbit feel guilty.
I think she's trying to give out to the cops, and then she inadvertently really insults this guy on his... on his first day on the job.
Yes, and then she feels guilty about making him feel guilty, so when he decides to go and look for it, he's basically, I'm the postmaster, I'm going to recover the post. And that makes her feel guilty, so she runs off after him, and then the bulldog runs after her. And there's lots of, I thought there was lots of Dr. Slump energy around this point in sort of the behaviour, particularly with Gretel, I think partly because... And then it was after the fact that I learnt, oh, he eventually was in the remake of Dr. Slump. We then find a bear in a barrel in the woods following Gretel around. And then Patty follows everyone else into the woods. There's a fun chase with the wolf and the bear. They get annoyed that the he gets annoyed that the post is just the post. It's not valuable. He's wasted his time. How do they end up thinking that they've killed the wolf? I can't remember now.
I think they
drop him out of a tree, but I can't remember.
Yeah, it's when the bear kid, was it Bobby? He meets Bobby up with bear, Patty. Yeah. And Patty's like, hey, that's my bag. And he's like, all right, what's in it? So if it's yours, it's like letters. It's like, okay, you fucking caught me. Here you go. But then Gretel comes back. I think at that stage, Bobby had lost him in a river or something. But yeah, they
fell down a riverbank.
Yeah, yeah. So it's Bobby and Patty running, climbing up a tree, and like they bonk Gretel on the head, and he falls off the tree, and they assume he's dead.
Yeah, they feel very guilty, but luckily they find a note saying that he was okay and he's gone home.
Because he has a sore head.
And then they get back to town and they have a big party, so you can see the character designs of all the characters you're going to meet over the next 51 episodes.
Hmm.
And then the ending theme has... Oh, no, it's not the ending theme. It's before we get to the ending theme. You get like they go to their new house and you get like a doll's house cutaway. Basically saying, look, kids, this is what you can buy for you.
Yeah, I literally did think that. I was watching it. I was like, oh, this is the toy advert section.
Yeah.
Like the way it was like, here's the cross section of the house. Here's your bedroom. Where's my bedroom? Oh, it's up here. Look how amazing it is.
I mean, like pretty good advertising, I got to say. I was like, there you go.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And then the next episode, they go to school, and then the wolf's at the school, and he steals a necklace. And so they have to go and recover the necklace again. Oh, it looks like a kid gets blamed for stealing the necklace.
Hmm.
So I guess every episode he's going to show up and do something bad, but then be not that bad at the end of the day. He's waving
otherwise
a sword
their
around.
Lives would be very peaceful and Sylvanian family and very like, I'm going to have a cup of tea. Oh, that sounds lovely. Let's do that. And it's like, surprise, motherfuckers, I got a sword.
Yes.
That's better.
I think it's the bulldog in particular. I think it was the guy who gives me a lot of Dr. Slump energy.
I did like him like calmly going back for his sunglasses.
Yes.
When he panicked.
Yeah. And then he puts them back on and then panics again.
Now I can officially panic.
This had a lot better animation than I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
It was a pleasant surprise, I will say. To the point where I'm like, oh, I wonder if there is a vein of talent and people working on these Toei shows that I wasn't paying attention to. These things like Lady. It's sort of like the not quite World Masterpiece Theatre.
Because
obviously this could easily be a World Masterpiece Theatre setting if it wasn't for all the anthropomorphic animals and the fact they're blatantly trying to sell you toys rather than trying to sell a century-old European novel.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was the big pleasant surprise of the week for me, this one. How do you guys feel about Mapletown Stories, Dwayne?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was like I was kind of expecting it's like, oh, I'll just be like Sylvanian families, like niceness and stuff, and then it just kind of you have this kid who's like, I don't want to be a lady, I want to climb on all the furniture and act like a dick and not do what dad says, but do the right thing anyway. And also a complete lunatic wolf, so that was considerably improved by. And even the bear character, the little kid bear, I was just like, yeah, he shows up in the middle of the woods in a barrel, accidentally revealing himself when he's disappointed by the lack of treasure.
Yes.
There was a lot of fun animation, a lot of good like pratfalls and boink kind of sound effects that I thoroughly enjoyed.
Gary, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, much the same, to be honest. I was kind of wondering how it was going to... Because in my head, I was thinking, right off the bat, I was like, oh, wow, this is going to feel very Sylvanian families.
Hmm.
As somebody who has seen the Sylvanian families cartoon, there are some similarities, but I think the I think Patty is definitely the standout character in terms of that she doesn't fit that mold. Like, you do get the sort of more mischievous characters in Sylvanian's families, but it's overall more restrained. And even the Sylvanian families cartoon has a villain who I'm pretty sure is not a toy, because he's like a anthropomorphic bat called Pack Bat, and he's always making mischief. And again, it's similar to Gretel, but he's not as big and he doesn't have a sword. And it's, I think this one is, it feels more like Sylvanian families dialed up to 11 in terms of the quality of the animation and the characters. And I think the overall story, from my distant memories of the original Sylvanian families cartoon, I think this is a lot better done. Considering this is the one that came after, you'd expect this to be the poor imitation, but actually I thought it was very well done.
Yeah, apparently the cartoon for Sylvanian Families was 87. So I think while the toys came first, the cartoon came later.
Okay, yeah. That makes sense.
And then there's the story of the stories of the Sylvanian Families is the stop motion one from Film Fair. Actually, that's the one I don't think I have seen it either, but I wouldn't mind seeing it, because it's Film Fair, and there's only four episodes, and each are narrated by Bernard Cribbins.
Oh,
yeah, okay.
Awesome.
It's like, okay, yeah, right. Maybe I would be very much interested in those things. Right, that's something to search for after the... Yeah, looks like there's three episodes of this series have been fan-subbed. And there are so far five episodes of the sequel have been fan subbed, but that is an ongoing fan subbing that's happening.
Okay, it's not
For New Mapletown.
Yeah, and the New Mapletown movie has been fan subbed as well.
I'd only say there's a pity there's not more, because it is quite good.
Yeah, I don't know how much of it was dubbed in the US, but I'm only...
I was just going to say, did this make it to the West?
Yeah, thanks for listening to my earlier spiel, Gary, when I said that it did. There is even two VHS tapes
out
in the UK.
I'm old now, right? I'm old. I'm allowed to be absent-minded.
What did you say 5 minutes ago?
When I meant the West, I meant, like, did it get onto broadcast television in the United Kingdom?
No, I think we just had those two VHS tapes, as far as I can tell.
Okay,
cool. Yes. No, I was just thinking, like people I know my age, when we were kids, around that sort of time, would have loved this, because I had a lot of friends, guys and girls, that adored Sylvanian Families, and I'm pretty sure they would have liked Mapletown.
Which is not to say that I'm right. It could have well shown up on some sort of tiny early satellite channel that was desperate for content. The history of satellite TV is something which is very much elusive to me.
The early era of the children's channel in particular, they put out all sorts of stuff. Like, they showed Voltron and other stuff that you just realized got UK showings before it became TCC and they started doing their own stuff.
As we'll see when we discuss, it's hard enough sometimes finding anything beyond the BBC listings. But we shall move on to Future GPX Cyber Formula from 1991. First airing on Nippon Television in March 1991, Future GPX Cyber Formula is a science fiction sports anime from Sunrise and created by prolific non-existent person Hajime Yatate. For those who don't know, that's the generic name that Sunrise attribute creation of various shows to.
Oh, I thought it was an Alan Smithy job, just really fucking dissatisfied with the work.
The first series of it ran for 37 episodes, and it was followed by a sequel OVA series called Future GPX Cyber Formula 2 that ran for 27 episodes between 1992 and the year 2000.
I think it was Future GPX Cyber Formula 1-1. You're supposed to say a 1-1.
Is that right?
Which is like, yeah, I was just like, that's the stupidest thing.
Yes, yeah, so this is the four arcs. Cyber Formula 1-1, Cyber Formula 0, Cyber Formula Saga, and Cyber Formula Sin. Then there's a separate OVA series, Future GPX Cyberformula, Early Days Renewal. And also the continuity includes multiple radio drama series and the PlayStation 2 game.
Wow. I didn't go for the PlayStation 2. I did, as part of my research, get a ROM. I mean, an official fucking Nintendo, a SNES cartridge, and I tried it out. It's all right. It's a bit Micro Machines, but you're always going up. It was okay.
And the series follows race car driver Hayato Kazami as he competes in the Cyber Formula Grand Prix in the future year of 2015.
Ooh.
But as you may have guessed, the series goes on for so long, it goes past our current time period and into our future still. So some of the later ones are still in the future for us. But rather than that, this is what this is Dwayne's pick. So I never know how much of our TV you get in Ireland.
When this was airing, I could still probably pick up UK TV on the rabbit ears, so yeah. You're probably fine. Yeah.
Yes, because finding RTE listings is
it's impossible, dude. Yes. They're fucking I'll give that to the BBC. They're very good at keeping their archive shit, but RTE is just like, fuck it. It's the past. The past is dead. Move on.
Yeah, BBC Geo.
Who wants to know what was on telly in the past?
Yes.
We do.
Yes, because it settles arguments and puts your mind at rest, or it puts your mind on edge because you suddenly realise you're older or younger than you thought you were. Or you were watching a cartoon you thought you were watching when you were 6, but actually you were watching when you were 14. the bulk of the TV was taken up with Comic Relief that day.
I'm trying to remember, was 1991 the year that the Stonk came out?
That is the Stonk, yes.
That is the Stonk. In my head, this is like, I think this might be the earliest Comic Relief that I have a fair amount of memories of. And I think at school, it would have been our last year of junior school, so we'd have been doing, like, they were getting, everybody was getting involved in Comic Relief. Like, I want to say this year, that year was the first year Comic Relief became a big thing or bigger. Like, I think up until then, I think they may have not run it every year and had...
They ran it every 2 years, and they did that long into... And then that's where I think that's where Sports Relief would alternate with Comic Relief, but whether it still does. So March 15th, 1991, I would have been 15. Gary?
I'd have been 10.
Dwayne?
What year was it again?
1991. March 15,
1991.
March.
Eight. Bingo. I'm very old. I have to count on my fingers.
Even kids' shows, it was Comic Relief, then it was a Jack and Ori special. Let's have a quick look at what that Jack and Ori special was.
I don't think I ever watched Jack and Ori.
It was Jack and Ori special. Oh dear, get ready for our paedophile of the week. Jack and Ori special for Comic Relief with Rory McGrath, Jimmy Mulville, Clive Anderson, Chris Langham. There he is, Angus Deaton, Bill Oddie, and Tony Slattery.
Bill Oddie's still okay, right?
Bill Oddie is, I think, yes, but he's not feeling too good. But yes.
In terms of his reputation.
Who
is okay in that era now?
Who's a weirdo and who's a creep?
Yeah, basically.
The worst game. Everyone loses.
I think the worst thing Bill Oddie did was probably... He used to do, like, bird watching and nature shows.
Yeah, he still does. Yeah, I think he's just a grub, but that might be something to do with his health problems. Yeah. Fantastic Max was following that. That was like Polly Pocket for boys, if I remember correctly. Was that what it was?
Fantastic Max. Was that Mighty Max, was it?
That might be Mighty Max. I don't know what Fantastic Max is then.
Yeah, Fantastic Max doesn't ring a bell.
It does ring a bell. Oh, he's like a baby with a punk haircut.
that sounds like Mean Yob.
Oh, fucking hell. It's Mike Young, the... Super Ted guy.
Oh,
is one of the co-creators.
Because his butler's basically Spotty. kind of.
Oh my god, it is spotty, yeah. Like a crapper, skinnier spotty.
Yeah. Like Spotty and Mr. Chips from Catchphrase.
Yes.
Kind of together.
Oh god. I think I would have watched this. I think I would have seen Mike Young's name and have gone, nope. Not watching this.
It looks familiar, but I don't think I would have liked it. I was never a fan of cartoon babies, to be honest. Mm. Rugrats and Muppet Babies included. Sorry.
Then we got more comic relief stuff. The winner of Radio 1's Pick of the Nose is announced, and Hale and Pace stonk with the studio.
Hey, there we go.
Whereas I think my position was this might have been the year that I stopped liking comic relief, mainly due to the stonk.
This is the year I started liking comic relief.
Newswrite Extra, nice. Grange Hill, last day of term at Grange Hill. More comic relief, then Neighbours. Neighbours always must go on. Then you got Wogan must always go on. And then you get comic relief. The stonker starts here.
Okay, what is a stonker?
I think they just called it that.
Because that was the year Stonk was the charity single for comic relief.
It was the song.
It's
okay,
something
okay.
Very
it
large.
Was a song, so it was something that they kind of made a big, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, so Stonker, informal British, something that is very large or impressive of its kind. It's a real stonker of a plan.
Like, I have heard stonking great, but I still don't understand. Yeah, I didn't know I get it from context, but I didn't know the specifics.
It's not really so much these days, I don't think.
Yeah, I think you're right. Maybe we need to bring let's not bring the stonk back.
No, does what's his name? Yahtzee on Zero Punctuation still use the phrase stonking great?
Oh, I think he does.
Like, that's the only person I know that still uses stonk regularly in their vocabulary.
That sounds about right. I used to like that guy's stuff, and then I hadn't watched it for probably over a decade, and then I watched his Yakuza review, and I was like, oh, I see why I stopped watching. Because he's not really evolved in any form.
No, if that's what you like, it's exactly the same thing.
Just continuing to use that subpar Charlie Brooker voice. I did find someone had recorded and uploaded to YouTube the final part of it, which was called Stonk Till You Drop, which was, or maybe that's not it. Anyway, there's like a big compilation of sketches. I don't think I ever managed to watch an entire evening of these. Yeah.
The stonk. Did you ever watch Comic Relief again, or was the stonk the end?
Well, the main reason I didn't see Comic Relief for so many years is because it would always inevitably be the same weekend as Minami-Con. Once Minami moved into March rather than in May, June, it always seemed to end up on exactly the same weekend.
Hmm.
So I'd remember seeing it in the background on that big TV they've got in the bar at the Novotel. But I don't think I've actually watched any of it for decades now at this point. I wouldn't even know. Yeah, so I don't know who presents it anymore. Or even when was the last comic relief out of interest? Because I'm sure I see the noses in Sainsbury's every so often.
Yeah, I kind of lost track of comic relief. Even Children in Need, I seem to have lost track, because the last time I saw Children in Need, the first comment I made was, what on earth happened to Pudsey Bear? He changed. Because he went all CG. I was not happy.
Yeah, that's how you keep the kids interested, man.
It's still going. It's the last one was 2019, so there'll be one next March.
Hmm.
A social distanced one, but there'll be one next March.
I think I'm the same as yourself. I'm not really aware of them because I stopped watching telly fucking years ago.
There is that as well, yes. Mm. That's probably the other issue. BBC Two, I've written down Catchword. I think that was some sort of quiz show.
Mm.
That I, why, do I, at the time when I was writing these notes, I must have remembered it, and now I don't remember it at all.
That's the perfect kind of notes, yeah.
It is. Quiz hosted by Paul Coyer. Okay. I've written down Fighting Talk, just to point out it's not the Radio 5 quiz show. And then they had Rory Bremner on at 9 o'clock, i.e. the bit in while the news was on during Comic Relief, they'd put something comedy on the BBC Two, so you could keep on watching comedy, never stop watching comedy.
Yep.
And I could not find any ITV or Channel 4 listings. UK number one at this time was Should I Stay or Should I Go by The Clash, because I think it was in an advert.
Oh, it came back up again. Yeah.
Come back.
And the Irish number one was Do the Bartman by The Simpsons.
Classic! What a classic.
Dear. I think I had that in fucking tape.
I had the Simpsons singing the blues album on tape. There was some good songs in there that I genuinely liked as a kid and still don't dislike as an adult.
I don't think I've heard the full album. It's a weird thing where I don't think I would have seen The Simpsons until it actually started on the BBC.
No, see, that's the thing. Like, we got hit with the wave of the stuff and the merchandise and the music, I think, before we actually got the fucking show. It was a weird goddamn thing.
Yeah, I think it was on Sky. It was on Sky over here. And they were releasing some VHS tapes, I think, as well.
That's probably what got it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, they were. Cause I remember friends having the tapes that didn't have Sky. That was kind of how they got around it. Mm-hmm. We had Sky, so we were. I had friends that would actually want to come on to my house so that we could watch The Simpsons. weird world we lived in back then.
Mm.
I definitely think Do the Bartman was a big kind of catalyst for that whole kind of Bart mania and. Like the merchandise all followed this, because I remember following Do the Bartman, you had like Simpsons figurines and like toys.
They didn't
hit until afterwards, and like I think McDonald's at that point, I think, and I'm sure they did a Happy Meal of it, and it was like a snowball effect that was kickstarted by that song getting to number one, because it was, although it wasn't number one on at this point in our charts in the UK, it definitely did hit number one at some point. I'm sure it did.
Okay. I was going to say, was it high in the charts at any stage? Like, it was so big in that regard, like, of the Bart Simpson mania kind of thing. I've elderly aunts kind of, and so it's like, oh, you're watching Bart Simpson kind of thing. And it's just like, it's not that. He's like the least main character of the show now. And this is years ago, so presumably even more out of date with it. Mm.
I remember seeing... When I was in Florida in 1990, it was like all the Americans at the theme parks were just like one in two maybe had Bart Simpson t-shirts on. And I guess 50% of those were bootleg Bart Simpson t-shirts.
Yeah. Nice. Oh, like probably well
with
over
the
50,
word
yeah.
Florida written on them. I had a few of those. Family holidays. It was just like all the holiday like t-shirt stores had bootlegs of the Simpsons characters, and it was just like seemed to be not an issue, no one cared. It was just like, yep, get your bootlegs here.
Well, yeah, because I know Matt Groening tried to collect as many bootleg stuff as he possibly could himself. Meanwhile, I don't know how much bootleg stuff there was of Cyber Formula. But our first episode is The Day That Destiny Was Decided. Ooh. Series director and the storyboard for this episode is Mitsuo Fukuda, who would go on to direct Gundam Seed, and before that, Gear Fighter Dendo. As I understand, basically, as the staff evolved over all those many, many Cyber Formula things, it was basically the staff at the end of the Cyber Formula just went on to do Gear Fighter Dendo, and then much of that staff went to do Gundam Seed.
Oh, kind of the same crew.
Okay. Yeah. I like Gear Fighter Dendo of what I've seen of it. I do not care for what I've seen of Gundam Seed.
Okay.
The screenwriter is Hiroyuki Hoshiyama, a man who seems to show up every three episodes of this podcast. famous for writing such things as Dirty Pair, Vifam, Osomatsu-kun, Let's and Go, and so much more. Character designer and animation director is Takahiro Yoshimatsu, from Dankuga, Hunter x Hunter, the more recent one, Trigun, and a lot of the Naga bits of the Slayers franchise, i.e. the movies and the OAVs.
I was going to say, is he the guy who designed the cars as well, or is that a different designer? Because they look familiar to
that
me.
That's a good point. I did not write down a mecha designer.
I couldn't find the specifics of the car design, so see, don't worry about it.
They may look familiar because it's Shoji Kawamori.
Okay.
where there's mecha designs, it's mainly one or two people. This time it's Shoji Kawamori.
Flip a coin. okay.
And the original character design is by Mitsumi Inohata, character designer on the Tales of video game series, Brain Powered, and Leader, which I think is the first anime which had a heroine with massive shoulder pads and jewels in those shoulder pads.
Oh, when you were collecting shoulder pads and stuff?
Yes, that is correct. I don't think it's where it comes from, but I think it's the first anime heroine who had those shoulder pads. Yeah. And our hero Hayata Kazami is played by Junichi Kanemaru, rather, who I have neglected to look up what else they're famous for. Doing him a dirty. I guess by the looks of things, the main thing he's famous for is Future GPX Cyber Formula.
Nice.
Well, he was in that, and he was the same guy in Cyber Formula Sin or whatever.
Yes.
Everything except for Cyber Formula Sin, I should say.
Ryo Akiyama in Digimon Tamers. Zazu Talk in Magic Knight Rayearth 2. Ginta Suo in Marmalade Boy. Sonic the Hedgehog in Sonic Knight of the Werehog. And Sonic the Hedgehog in Sonic X. I don't know what Sonic Knight of the Werehog is. It's a CG Sonic anime.
I assume it's related to that game where he turned into...
Yeah, Sonic Unleashed.
That's it. I couldn't think of the subtitle of it.
Sonic the Hedgehog and Chip rest at a house which turns out to be the home of some ghosts.
Yeah, Chip is the guy from that game, so that's the one, all right.
Okie doke.
maybe that's how he turned into a werehog, because that's never explained, I think.
Righty-ho, that's more deep Sonic lore than I'm aware of.
Oh, there's so much.
The opening theme is I'll Come, and the ending theme is Winners, and they're both by G-Grip, who are Mayumi Sato, Miki Kawano, Yumi Kinoshita, and Asako Tokuhashi. I know this because they were all helpfully labelled as such in English on the cover of their album Dream Horizon.
Oh, that's useful.
And apparently they were originally a three-piece band called Image, who formed in 89, or at least first appeared on TV in 89. The drummer, Yumi Kinoshita, would later provide solo songs for Future GPX Cyber Formula Zero and the radio drama Future GPX Cyber Formula Picture Land.
I did enjoy the music in this. It was super 90s.
I have to say, I thought the opening was very much like, this is my sweet spot. This is the sort of thing I'm familiar from the time I started watching anime.
Yeah, I was so delighted by this. I was really happy that one of the mechanics in it was actually listening to it on her fucking headphones. So I was just like, because she likes the theme tune as well. This is cool.
Yeah, no, that was brilliant.
Dwayne, tell us all about what happens in the day that destiny was decided.
Oh, I'm trying to remember the correct order now. I think we start off with sort of a thing of, okay, this is the brand new kind of racing from 2015. It's cyber F1 racing. F1 racing is dead. This is the better version. So everyone has like really cool cars with computers that... I think like they're just the computers that are like your, what do you call the guy who sit beside you and tells you where the turns are and shit in
rally driving,
in rally racing. Yeah.
I don't know. Is it Navigator?
I think it's just,
I guess,
I don't know.
Like basically that it seems to be like, you know, you have an AI that lets you map the races. So he knows the corners. It'll warn you of cars coming up, all this kind of thing. I'm just like, that doesn't seem that advanced, but then you have like cars that transform and had jet boosters and shit. So I'm just like, okay, yeah, that's fairly cool. There's some young buck who's like the guy who's going to win the next prestigious race, even though as far as I can tell, this is the first cyber rally thing. And I'm just like, okay, that's strange. But anyway, we have, I've forgotten the name of the actual team, the team that we're following. And they're worried because their car hasn't shown up yet and their driver is kicking up a stink. And they're like, oh, they'll get here. They were just delayed at the port and we kind of cut to them. It's the, I think the main mechanic and kid, Ayato Kazami, who says, I don't like rally cars that drive themselves. I much prefer my motorbike. And surely he will not be the protagonist of this show. But they're attacked by evil car-stealing terrorists with a helicopter and a winch. They're run off the road. And he has to take this key and drive the, get the car to the racetrack just in time. Because I can't go because I'm busted up from having crashed a truck into a tree kind of thing. So he busts off and he initially very annoyed by this computer that's telling him all this shit, not telling him the shit, but not telling him the answers to the questions before he asks them. The computer's like, fucking, you got to ask me first, bro. The guys in the helicopter die in a horrible fucking explosion that murders them because they would have hit the fucking pipes anyway. It would have been grand. But as he gets there, he's like, okay, now I'll leave you off to the racetrack or whatever. He's like, no, you're registered to me now. And it takes like a week for me to reset my system. So you got to do the race next, kid. I think I've covered most everything because it's mostly like meow, meow, fucking just race car noises and action.
Yeah, the Sugo team is...
Sugo, yes. It's his father's design of a car, but apparently he's... excuse me. He's against the idea of cars that drive themselves, even though his dad designs cars that drive themselves. And he got his license to drive them, but he didn't want to do it. So why did he go that far? Did he go against his dad? We don't know. That's for future episodes to explain to us.
Yeah, and unlike what was the show where he bonded with the robot there to make him police chief, they didn't have to make him police chief in this one.
No, no.
But very similar plot. Oh dear, you bonded with the computer. You're going to have to drive it all the time. Yeah, and they all show up just in time. The dog hears it first and gets a smile on his face.
That dog was so human looking. It was great. What was the dog's name? It was like fucking. Named after
it's
like a V8. V8.
Yeah, he's just called it. V8. Yeah, named after.
Okay. Terrible name for a dog, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, there's like the so there's this rival team.
Yeah, it's the guy who's the young buck, and he's like, a new race car driver. And he in the interview, he seems very like, oh, do you think you'll win? He's like, I have an absolute plan for winning. And it's like, you sound like you're not even considering the other racers. Who do you think is in with a shot? And he's like, I don't fucking know, man. But he's interested. What's this new team? What have they got? A car with a jet booster in it, apparently.
Yeah, it's. I was going to say it's a less mean-spirited speed racer, but I guess that helicopter did crash.
No, those people, two guys definitely died in the helicopter explosion.
Yeah,
which is like,
that.
This is. I looked at this, I was like, that looks like Speed Racer. And then some people fucking died. And I was like, yeah, that's like Speed Racer. Perfect.
Yeah. I quite enjoyed this, but not as much as I enjoyed Maple Town.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get where you're going. Like, I did enjoy this. Like, I think at the age I was, I would have still enjoyed this. If I was slightly younger, I would have enjoyed it even more because fucking cars are rad as shit.
How about you, Gary? How did it compare to Pole Position for you?
That's all, yeah.
Is that always the leader for you?
like Pole Position... Well, it's a tricky one because I, having watched Pole Position in more recent years, like, wow, this is, I kind of wish I hadn't watched it. How good this was. Never lives up to how good it actually is if I watch it now.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I was watching this and I was thinking that, like, how would I have reacted to this? And I think because it had a talking computer in the car, and obviously I was a big Pole Position fan, massive Knight Rider fan, I'd have been all over this. Like, I'd have liked this. Even if... Because I said how I don't watch, I never used to like cartoons with babies in. I also didn't like bratty kid protagonists in cartoons when I was younger.
Which is, that's most cartoons though.
It is, which is weird. Like I always used to hate Spike in Transformers, for example.
Oh, yeah, like, no, even the robots kid, are the best part of that, for
yeah,
sure.
Like, yeah, like, even as a kid, the only human that I thought was kind of cool was Sparkplug, his dad, randomly. But, so, like, the kid would have annoyed me, but the mere fact that the car could drive itself, it had a really cool swanky key, and it had a computer and a jet engine, and it looked cool, I'd have been like, I would have enjoyed this, and I would have probably wanted the toys. Because you got to want the toys. Cool-looking cars, me at, like, 10? Yeah, that was still very much a thing.
Yeah, I should say, I think me at the age that these were aimed at, I think I would have taken this over Mapletown Stories.
Yeah, yeah.
Me now is a different thing. But because despite one being a race car anime and the other one being about a wolf hijacking a train... And being,
I mean, like, that makes it sound pretty fucking cool.
By children. There's a lot more energy to the stuff going on in Mapletown.
Yeah.
There's a lot of screens and static shots inside the car.
Static shots in the car. Like, the best animated bits are any of the bits where they're moving the stick shift or they're kind of pressing the pedals and pushing buttons. And I'm like, yeah, because they're going to reuse those over and over. They need to be good.
Yeah. I think I completely agree. And I think the other thing was this probably falls into the same trap where I'm sure if I'd have watched it when I was younger, as I'd have got older, my memory of this would have been, oh, that's that show with the really cool opening and ending, but like ignore the actual show itself, which is basically where I'm at with Pole Position, sadly, even though I've got the box set. I don't hate it. I'm just kind of, I watch it now and I'm like, yeah, this isn't as good as I remember it being. Like, I remember it being amazing.
Yeah, it's and it's from the era when Deke actually got decent animators to work on it. But
yeah, it still looks great, or at least I think it does. But I don't know.
There's some bits of the car stuff that, like, yeah, it's static shots and the speed lines and stuff. But for the most part, it still looks quite nice. I do like the character designs and everything. I think they move pretty good.
Mm.
Then finally, it is Tekkaman Blade. First airing on the 2nd of July, 1975, weeks before I was born. Tekkaman the Space Knight was a 26-episode science fiction anime by Tatsunoku Productions. In 1992, the franchise was revived with the release of Tekkaman Blade, a series that doesn't have all that much more than the name and the idea of people turning into space knights in common with its predecessor.
It's got some of the color themes.
That's, I guess, that as well. The reboot lasted 50 episodes and was eventually edited, dubbed, and turned into an English language series called Technoman that aired in America on UPN in 1995. In Japan, a sequel to OVA series, Tekkaman Blade 2, was released in 1994, running for 6 more episodes. The original Tekkaman returned more recently as a character in 2017's Infinity Force. But this aired February the 18th, 1992, when I would have been 16.
I think Tekkaman and Tekkaman Blade were both in Marvel versus Tatsunoko, I think.
Yeah.
I can't remember which one I was better at. I know there was one I couldn't get the hang of, and the other one I was like, I'm all right with this guy.
I'm going to assume that, like me, you were both a year older than the previous show, because they're about around the same point in time.
I would have picked this had I not watched it as Technoman on TCC. I was just like, that's cheating. I feel that's not on.
But rather than this is what we could have been watching on the BBC. But I probably wasn't, because 92. Yeah, I'd have been
video gaming.
Yeah, probably. That's correct. Yes. Video gaming, I think, on a weekday. It is a weekday, isn't it? Yes, it's a Tuesday. So, on the BBC One, the kids' shows were Joshua Jones. I have no idea what this is.
Never heard of it.
No description on Radio Times to tell you what it was. The New Yogi Bear Show, which we discussed on the previous episode. Do not remember that ninja character at all. Swaps. It's a Jackadori story, apparently.
Oh, okay.
Read by William Rushton.
And it's that baby with the Nappy and the Mohawk.
Fantastic Max again. We can't escape him. The Really Wild Road Show.
Is that like Chris Packham on tour?
Chris Packham, Sue Dawson and Terry Nutkins, yes. From the Welsh Mountain Zoo. Then Grange Hill.
I thought it was the last year and therefore over last year.
That was the end of term. I guess it's not end of term in this episode yet.
Yeah, Grange Hill just doesn't die. I assume it has now
it
died.
Has,
or
yes,
is it,
died,
like
it died a while ago now, yes.
Okay. Okay. Like EastEnders and Coronation Street, where there is no end.
No.
It's like One Piece.
Hey, One Piece ends in sight, so... I don't know if that...
Oh, it'll absolutely finish within 5 years.
Yes, he says it's going to finish in 5 years.
Pinky swear.
He'll probably say it's going to finish in 5 years again in a few weeks'
in
time.
In 5 years, yeah.
On BBC Two, I think the only thing I would have watched would be Quantum Leap.
Yep, I'd have been all over Quantum Leap, even at the age
I keep meaning to go back to that, yeah.
See, I don't, because I saw all the way to the end, and the end is so bad that I do not ever want to revisit
it. Fair enough. I'm more so like thinking about hopping into the middle and then just petering off as I usually do before it gets to the end. Perhaps it's best enjoyed like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it gets really Christian towards the end.
Oh!
Isn't he God in the end?
I think like God is the one responsible for sending him hither. And
oh, he's thither. God's working through him or something.
Yeah, there's like an evil leaper as well. I think the point at which the evil leaper appeared was the point at which I was like, okay, I'm out. I'm done here.
I don't even remember the evil leaper. Clearly, I'm lucked out.
I'm pretty sure there was one. Don't tell me if I'm delusional. Let's send my mind into a spiral. Sam leaps into the body of a Native American Indian torn between the old ways and the new.
Okay, maybe I don't want to go back to
help
this.
His grandfather die with dignity. These are what they're all like. They're all...
What can we do that's offensive? Here we go.
But we try not to be offensive. We try to learn about different types of people.
I understand that they're specifically going like we're trying to show American Native American culture. But it's like, yeah, but you're going to dress him up as an Indian, aren't you?
Of course you are.
And Al's going to say things that he shouldn't say.
Yes.
Yes, he does. And like every episode where he jumps into the body of a woman, Al says something inappropriate every time.
On ITV, you could have been watching Josie Smith. No idea.
No idea what that is. Like, that's not Josie from Josie and the Pussycats, is it?
I don't think so. Josie Smith, CITV. Let's type that
in. Did she go solo? Maybe she went on a solo career. I don't know what Josie's surname is, so
it is a twice weekly drama series for children based on the books by Madeline Nabb about a tomboy girl.
Nope,
I don't recall it at all. I probably would not have been home from school at this point.
The only books about a tomboy girl that I remember was the books about Tyke Tyler. That
again,
was one we used to read
me.
A lot of school.
DuckTales. I think we're all familiar with that.
No, I've never heard of it. What's that?
It's David Tennant, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, you know, I'd have probably, like, depending on how the timing played out, I'd have probably watched DuckTales, then gone for dinner, then watched Quantum Leap, then video games. I would have also watched Blockbusters.
That was followed by a Porky Pig cartoon, which I guess that you'd always be disappointed. Get the Warner Brothers logo up and then, oh shit, it's Porky Pig.
Yep.
Like, Porky Pig's great with other characters.
Yes.
Mm. On his own, he's dreadful. Like, I would take Pepe Le Pew over Porky Pig, and I'm not a big Pepe Le Pew fan.
Mm.
Just Us.
Don't recognise that at all.
No, I don't know that either. Blockbusters. I would have probably watched that. And then in the evening, I definitely watched the first series of Men Behaving Badly. I think this is
even... what this was, the first series.
I think this is even the first episode.
Jesus.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well. I probably didn't see this then. Like, I did start watching Men Behaving Badly, so, but I don't think it was at age 10.
This is the series when it's Harry Enfield, not Neil Morrissey.
In that case, I've definitely not seen it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right, I'm going to zoom in because I think I remember the Times description of it being toe-curlingly of its time.
When did your man replace him? Because maybe that's when we started watching it then.
Yeah, it moved to BBC when Morrissey... It's a weird one when it moved. Yeah, it moved from ITV to BBC.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how did that happen? That's not something that is. Yeah.
No.
Not in that direction anyway, because that means the Beeb paid for it.
Yeah. Well, it's because it's the independent. It's the era of independent production companies and things. So.
Right.
That's why you've had, like, most recently you've had Taskmaster go from Dave to Channel 4, and that could have ended up at the BBC as well if. They'd offered enough money. Men Behaving Badly, a new sitcom by Simon Nye, features Harry Enfield and Martin Clunes as two young men who share a flat. Clunes is the owner and Enfield is the Workshire lodger who never manages to pay the rent. That is one source of comedy. The bigger one is girls and sex. The lads talk a lot about both. Clunes is trying to ditch his girlfriend and Enfield has just been abandoned by his. By the sort of coincidence that can only be contrived by the writers of sitcoms, the chaps suddenly get a new neighbour played by Leslie Ash. She is a gift from heaven, attractive, single and guaranteed to provide plenty of material for future episodes. At a guess, the show should appeal most to young unattached men who share flats and have trouble with girls. Women's libbers will probably hate it, and the rest of the population may simply feel left out. This was their choice. This was a choice.
This was a choice, but yet they sound like they buried it.
Yes.
What? That's bizarre. That's like the driest and like most like fucking... Like it's to apply to youth people, you know, the young ones.
Yeah.
Fucking bizarre way of putting it, yeah.
Yeah, that wouldn't have sold it to me.
No.
Over on Channel 4, there are two shows I could definitely guarantee you that I did watch.
Mm.
One after another. My Two Dads, a terrible American sitcom. Mm.
Never heard of it.
It's with Paul Reiser and Greg Evigan. There's basically this girl whose mum's died, and there's two possible people who might be her dad. And so both of them have to be her dad, as laid out by a judge, who then constantly is interfering in their lives as well, the judges. And of course, the dads are very different, and they can't get on with each other. But they'll try
they're
their
a
best
real odd couple,
for their possible
say.
Daughter. Yes, you might say they're a real odd couple. I think generally the performances were better than what I remember the show actually being.
Mm.
And that's followed by Games Master.
That I would have watched.
Yeah.
Which version Games Master is this?
Oh, good question. I assume it's Dominic Diamond at this point. Mm. I don't think it had gone over to Dexter Fletcher doing his...
I don't think I remember a Games Master without Dominic Diamond, or is that just a selective memory?
I think it's like a selective memory.
In the same way that I choose not to remember Crystal Maze of Ed Tudor-Pole presenting instead of Richard O'Brien.
Hmm.
Formatted hosts. Maybe it's not. Okay, so the third series is when you got Dexter Fletcher, which was 93-94.
They switched back then to Dominic Diamond after a while.
I think so, yeah. They must have done.
Because I seem to recall him presenting it like in its later years as well, for definite.
Yes. Mm. So then it says then, to balance this, the production company dropped all of the co-presenters and gave UK Games champion Dave Perry a regular co-presenter slot on every episode.
Whee! Jazz Rignall also appeared on it.
Yeah, I think that was in the first two series. They'd have like loads of games journalists showing up. Mm-hmm. And then they cut it back down to just Dave Perry, who they tried and embarrass. What's the one where the Super Mario 64 challenge where he had a fit about being embarrassed?
Jeez.
I don't remember that one. That sounds good, though.
It is. That was from Series 7, so I must have watched this well into adulthood.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. Like, I think I watched Games Master right up until the time that Channel 4 started putting out bits, which would have been, that wasn't until 99, and then that became my source of video game TV.
Mm.
And I think that was probably just because Dominic Diamond and Patrick Moore couldn't compete with, like, Emily Booth, Alex Kratosky, and Emily Newton-Dunn. Because, I don't know, funny, that 18-year-old male, three attractive female presenters, suddenly Dominic Diamond wasn't so cool anymore.
Dirty boy.
Sure.
Dirty boy.
Throwing their, like, I was going to say, throw in their sort of late, because it was a four later slot, so there was obviously loads of, like, skits and edgy humour and all that sort of stuff. And that infamous Pokemon review where they basically got a Pokemon copy of the game, put it in a bin and said that was the end of it. Don't ask us to review Pokemon anymore. I don't know if that was their decision or the writer, but yeah, somebody there didn't like it. Anyway, I'm digressing.
I was going to say, was the game's animal Dave Perry not sexy enough for you?
He was not. Although, to be fair, Julian Rignall's mullet, you know, we got to see that on the telly a couple of times, I'm sure.
The UK number one and the Irish number one were the exact same song. It was Goodnight Girl by Wet Wet Wet.
Oh dear. Was that number one forever as well, like most of the songs?
I think it might have been, that might have been the one we're thinking of when it was number one forever.
Okay.
Or was it not? Or was it
That was what's it called? I know Love Is All Around Me. Is that what it's
called?
That's
it. That's the one which was
was the one that was like 4 months or something ridiculous. Or 16 weeks, something like that.
Like, did one of those guys do something? Because I don't really hear those songs replayed that much.
I think everyone's just sick of them.
Yeah, it's probably just that.
I think it is that. Death by Epley.
Yeah, I wonder if they were a band who were bought a lot by Grands.
Oh, now they're all dead, so no one's buying anymore. Natural selection killed their career. Harsh.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, apparently they're going to be... their Twitter's still active, so clearly there are Wet, Wet, Wet fans out there still.
Mm.
No date for Glasgow because of coronavirus restrictions.
Fair enough.
Righty-ho, let me find the episode. I always forget to do one thing. It's either...
Oh, this one has a great fucking title as well.
Oh,
yeah.
What is it then?
I think I have it here. Let me give that... The Sky Soaring Superman.
That's it, okay. The Sky Soaring... Episode 1, Sky Soaring Superman, is directed by Hiroshi Nageshi of Knights of Ramun and 40, Saber Marionette J and K.O. Beast... fame. There's plenty of other things he's done as well, but I've picked those out because
K.O. Beast, I definitely have to go back to. Yeah.
Series composition is by Mayori Sekijima and Satoru Akahori, also of Nice and Removed and 40 and Saber Marionette J. Character design is by Tomonori Kagawa, credited as T-O 3 I's and an O. Don't know how that's supposed to be pronounced. Idion, Zabungle, and more recently, You Don't Know Gunma Yet. It's like
I still don't know Gunma.
It's a short anime that me and Dwayne watched for Let's Go. I don't think Niall did Niall not, is that one Niall didn't watch. I can't remember.
I don't remember. Like, I felt like is that the one where he was saying he needs to watch more Gundam? He's watched more Gundam now, so he could probably get into
that's not
more.
A Gundam. No, it's the one where it's the region. It's the region in Japan where they're landlocked, and
it's like a tourist advertisement,
and it's sponsored
that region. I remember now. Sorry,
and
I'm mixing it up.
Constantly dissing the region itself.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, they go sea mad because they're landlocked, so they're mad for the ocean. They can't swim. Yes. They love fish food, that kind of stuff, you know. It was a very strange advertisement for the area. The ending where it shows, like, lots of touristy attractions was the most advertising I got.
Yes,
really.
But they'd have characters show up who were real people occasionally. And yet, it's still not the strangest one. The Tenshi one is the strangest one that I've come across in that sort of... Please advertise this region with your anime. Okay, let's put a load of bondage in it.
I mean, mean, that's definitely going to draw some kind of crowd.
I mean, it's definitely in line with Tenshi. I'm not sure it's in line with the region they're advertising. Apparently, this guy does not like big-eyed character designs, I was reading.
Oh?
That's why there aren't... Well, there's maybe one in this, but generally everyone is less big-eyed.
He would have hated that cyber formula thing, even the dog had big eyes.
Yeah.
Mm.
Mecha Design is by Rei Nakahara, also of Knights of Ramune and 40, and KO Beast. And Yoshinori Sayama, who I noticed has loads of credits for designing displays in mecha shows and science fiction shows. So they're the person people bring in to make a computer screen look good, you know.
Oh, when you said displays, I thought you meant like displays for the toys or something.
Yeah, no, or like no, how apparently, the I think it's stood. Or...
I think it's like computer screens and like cockpit stuff.
Okay. I was paying attention to some of those, especially in the one scene where they're all standing on a display, which I was like, that's very disrespectful.
And our hero is played by Toshiyuki Morikawa, who is playing D-Boy, a.k.a. Tournament Blade, a.k.a. we don't find out in this episode... Takaya Aiba. And we may know him as the voice of Enel or Hachan in One Piece, the fourth Hokage in Naruto Shippuden, Ninja Slayer in Ninja Slayer, and the new voice of Hiroshi Nohara in Shinchan.
Hmm.
And our opening theme is Reason, our ending theme is Energy of Love. They're both by Yumiko Kosaka. And she had written the song Reason in high school, according to her Wikipedia page, and her one non-Tekkaman Blade single was the Ghost Sweeper Mikami ending theme, Believe Me. And we're still waiting for somebody who can pick Ghost Sweeper Mikami so Gary can watch it.
Yes! I legitimately want to watch that show.
Sway! Oh, no, it's Gary this time. Gary!
Yep, it is!
Tell us all about what happens in the first episode of Tekkaman Blade.
Yeah, let me refer to my notes, because I tried to make them comprehensive, because I have memory like a sieve. So, we start off with a shot of space, and we're advised that it's the Allied Earth calendar year 192. Don't know what that means, but that's...
I assume it means set. Earth united 192 years ago.
Something like along those lines. We see a massive explosion. We don't know the names of these characters at this point in time, so all I had written down was a red and silver mech warrior is fighting bugs. What we will know is that it's actually Tekkaman Blade fighting lots of alien bugs out in space. And he makes a comment about how he's going to crush their evil ambition here in space. We're then taken a shot down to what we then discover is Earth, and we see a woman looking out over a very barren wasteland. We later learn this woman's called Aki, and she's making a comment about the fact that Earth doesn't look very recognisable. You then hear an alarm trigger, at which point we're introduced to another new character, a guy called Noel, who works with Aki, and he makes a comment asking about the fact that as Earth is going to die out, why doesn't he and Aki run off to Mars together? They could be the next Adam and Eve and, you know, bring back the human race. She's not amused and gives him a good slap. They then get a phone call from the chief, who makes a comment that he doesn't have a problem with them being Adam and Eve, but he does have a problem with them eating food unless it's an officially organized picnic. Yeah. So they're then told that they need to go out to Earth to do some, I think it's like reconnaissance or investigative type work, and that they
later
should
on she's like chopping up a plant and like collecting samples. So,
yeah, some sort of like researching. And he explains that they should leave fighting to the Allied Defense Force. And I'm sort of thinking at some point we're going to see the Allied Defense Force, I'm sure. And that they are the Outer Space Development Organization, and their mission is alien research and analysis. Before the call ends, we see another young girl appear behind the chief, and she kind of waves and makes a funny noise at Noel, who gets a bit embarrassed. We later find out this girl is called Millie. So it then cuts back to the big fight between Blade, as I made notes here, that was what I started calling him for short, because I didn't know his full name, who's fighting more bugs, and suddenly a new mech that's in similar shape to himself appears, and he makes a comment that this is Tekkaman Dagger. And Tekkaman Dagger is not a good guy because he fights on the side of the bugs. So they start fighting. So you're then... you then have a scene where you're back with Noel and Aki. They are doing some more digging around on Earth, and they're actually finding these plants. And they make a comment about the aliens, as I understand it, grow plants on planets that they're going to attack. Is that right? Like,
I think it's like a War of the Worlds thing. Like, they're terraforming it before they attack or something.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah, so they've been dropping these plants. Because I think there's a comment they made about the fact that, like, why would they blow up a planet that they have put plants on? Mm. But they're growing plants. But obviously, Noel and Aki are basically harvesting these plants. They've got, like, full, almost like hazmat suits on. So it then goes, it then switches back yet again to the fight with Tekkaman Blade and Tekkaman Dagger and these bugs. It looks as though you think that Blade has got the upper hand as he's attacking Dagger, but as he goes for an attack, Dagger moves and some bugs come out from underneath on the of the floor and get like a surprise attack on him, and they manage to sink their fangs into him, and his arm has been breached in a few spots, and it looks pretty grim. And it's looking pretty dire, at which point Dagger then stabs Blade and the bugs, because, you know, I guess they're disposable, stabs him like all the way through. I think it looks like he goes right through the chest. Mm. And he kind of throws him off it was like a satellite, I think they were fighting on.
It was an orbital ring around Earth, like one big satellite around the entire planet. Yeah.
Yeah. They were fighting on, I thought it was some sort of satellite. Yeah. An orbital ring around the Earth. And he gets basically stabbed, thrown off. Dagger makes a comment about, like, you know, this is it sort of thing, and says goodbye to him, because it's basically he's hurtling towards Earth and he's assumed he won't survive that fall. So we then switch back to Noel and Aki. They pick up on their radar Blade, who is hurtling towards the Earth. And they, because of the rate of the speed at which it's hurtling, they think it's a falling meteorite. So they rush to the crash site. They see the big explosion of what, again, they still think it's a meteorite, until they see this sort of battered, naked man kind of staggering out of the explosion and then collapsing. They pick up Blade and take him back to the to their facility, and they put him in a hospital bed and put him on a drip and kind of try to nurse him back to health. He then wakes up and likewise irrationally panics and assumes everyone's villainous, even though, you know, they're treating his wounds. He takes Millie hostage because Millie was looking over him, and he demands to know if they are Earthlings or if they are Radam. Noel asks what Radam are and is told that Radam are aliens that have occupied the orbital ring around the Earth. At this point, Noel asks Blade who he is, and asks him what his name is, and he doesn't know. This is why I kept referring to him as Blade, because I didn't know either. So, like, yeah, he doesn't know what his actual name is. Says he doesn't remember it. He then asks who's in charge, and he communicates with the chief, who appears on the radio, and he asks to borrow a spaceship. And the chief informs him that he should know, being an Earthling, that there are no spaceships on Earth. And their conversation about why he would like a spaceship is interrupted because an alarm goes off again, and now it looks as though these alien bugs are now attacking the Earth. We're then treated to a lovely sequence of Earth's defense forces trying and failing miserably to attack the bugs. I think we see a batch of jets try and take on one flying bug, and it kills all of them. And then one of the bigger, like land alien bugs, get shot at by a batch of like a squad of tanks before it then engulfs them in, I think, flame, or I wasn't sure if it was flame or red mist.
I thought it was acid.
It was red, it was like a red sort of smoke kind of blast in their direction, and when it cleared, there was nothing left. So that goes on. We then kind of cut back to the team in the HQ, and Millie happens to reveal to Blade that there is a spaceship. There's one in Hangar 3. And of course, at this point, Blade makes a run for it. Noel and Aki chase after him. Aki mentions that the ship's got no weapons and therefore would be useless in a battle in space against the bugs. And it's at this point that Noel refers to Blade as D-Boy. And when Aki asks what D-Boy means, she says it means dangerous boy. And from that point on, I think the pair of them just refer to him as D-Boy. So maybe I'll just call him D-Boy from this point. So D-Boy then decides to beat some humans up to get directions, because you know that's what you do if you're trying to save humans, you beat them up. And he's eventually told by a woman after he beats up, like, I don't know if it's a boss or co-worker, that, like a construction worker, burly guy.
Probably a mechanic or something by the look
of
it.
Yeah, he beats him up and then tells her that she'll get the same treatment if she doesn't tell him where Hangar 3 is. So she very nervously gives him some instructions. He then runs off, but not before he tells her both thank you and then tells her to not get herself killed, which I thought was quite funny because he just roughed up her friends, threatened her life, but then afterwards says thanks and don't get yourself killed out there. So D-Boy eventually finds the hangar and he finds the ship, jumps in the ship, starts it up, and he's prepping the ship for takeoff. But before the ship takes off and before the hatch closes, Noel and Aki manage to get on board the ship. So the ship door closes, but they're also on board. And D-Boy then flies the ship up towards the orbital ring. Needless to say, Aki and Noel confront him in the cockpit, but there's no time for them to have an argument because there's a load of bugs attacking. And whilst the ship doesn't appear to have any attacking weapons, it does have some defences. Aki springs into gear and activates like a magnetic shield, and they start doing some evasive manoeuvres. It's at this point that D-Boy tells Noel and Aki that they need to look after the ship because he's going out there. Noel warns him that, you know, he's a human, and therefore if he opens the door and gets sucked into the vacuum of space, he will die. But he tells him he can't die. So they carry on controlling the ship. The next thing they see is that D-Boy has jumped out of the ship and is undergoing a transformation where he turns into Techaman Blade. And they catch a full glimpse of the transformation out of the window of the cockpit. So there is an alien that then makes a beeline for the ship and, of course, is stopped and killed by Techaman Blade. And Noel and Aki look on in shock at this. Techaman then sort of yells out something along the lines of, let's go, before he then heads towards the aliens to engage in battle. That's kind of where it ends. You don't actually see that battle. You then get a next episode preview. The next episode preview it doesn't give too much away. It looks like it's about Noel confronting Techaman about who he really is. But we do also see that Techaman Dagger locks eyes on their ship, so he's presumably aware of the fact that D-Boy did survive and has potentially got some new human friends. And that is it, I think, in a nutshell.
That is an excellent recap, but I think you got some of the names wrong.
Did I really?
Yeah. Like, on my notes here, I have it Aki as Star Summers and Noel as Ringo Richards.
Did the subs I have, like...
No, that's right. No, he's playing a Technoman gag on you.
But
I've not seen Technoman. Yes. I didn't realize.
I watched the episode of Technoman to compare it, and I was just like, all these names are dumb as shit. The one thing I will say is, like, he also doesn't know his name, but someone called him Blade, as in the guy Dagger called him Blade when he was up there. Yeah. And I was like, okay, so they just call him Blade. I was like, that's sensible, because it's less confusing, like you were saying. But other than that, all the names are terrible. And some weird fucking cut choices, obviously.
Yeah, like, so that was my thought process when I was watching it, had not seen it before. It was like I was having to make notes about who these characters are. So I'd initially wrote down Noel was cocky guy. And then Aki was just girl number one and Millie was girl number two until I was told their names later on in the episode. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but like Techaman, he only ever gets called Blade by Dagger. So that was what I was having to write down his name as until he got called D-Boy. And I'm like, well, I've got to go with D-Boy or Blade here. until we learned his real name, which was not in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But I quite enjoyed this. I'm sure there's a lot of other series that are in similar vein, but I've not seen that many, so this for me was quite fun.
Mm.
I did feel it didn't progress as much as I thought it might. I was expecting the first episode to be a full-on character introduction with an initial battle that is won.
Mm.
Whereas this, you didn't even get that. It was like the episode ends as he goes to engage. And I'm sat there thinking, well, he just got banged up. Like, how is he now going to go back and suddenly win where, you know, he's clearly not 100%. He's still bandaged up.
Mm.
But I thought it was pretty good. I did like the D-Boy nickname, and some of the dialogue I thought was amusing. Like the bit when D-Boy says kind of thank you to the woman for giving him the information after he threatened her and beat up her coworker, mm-hmm. and then tells her to not die. I thought that was quite funny. I think the other thing that I didn't touch on in that was at the point when he was holding Millie hostage, when she breaks free, I think she does so by elbowing him. And then when she runs and stands over with the rest of them, she kind of pulls the eyelid down and sticks her tongue out and says, that's what he deserves.
Yeah, she's very like the post-apocalypse and everything, but she's acting like the little kid character. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how old she's supposed to be, but I was thinking the same thing. I was like, she's doing like the, I'm acting like a kid, even though I'm probably not a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But just like some of the other stuff, I don't know if they were deliberate gags or not. Like the fact that the chief had no issue with this idea of them both going to Mars, running away, and being Adam and Eve, but they were absolutely not allowed to eat food in their vehicle, and they had it had to be a picnic.
Given who was writing it, I think they're deliberate gags.
Because
in general, Akahori in particular is generally more associated with gag-laden material. To that point, yes, it was funnier than... I don't know... This is the worrying thing. I don't know if I've seen this before, but it felt like I've seen it before.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Like you were saying, Gary, it feels kind of like other things, but yeah, it's not entirely clear. I know I'd seen this before, so I was grand in that regard.
Yeah,
because I do like the comedy. It felt very like workplace people taking the piss out of each other.
There was bits where I was like, oh no, that's my speeder. That's Dan Cougar I'm remembering. And I was like, or is it just because I had an issue of Protoculture Addicts, which was all about Tekko and Blade, and I've read a detailed synopsis, and that stuck in my head because that was when I was really getting into anime, and so all that stuff has went lodged itself.
Opening, he's like, there's a robot he's surfing on, which is like, that's obviously from a bunch of other things, but that turns into like its own robot. And I think he has to go into it to transform at some point.
Yeah,
I don't know if he gets an upgrade. I'm just like, or am I mixing it up with other fucking things?
Sure. I've seen the original Tekkaman as well. Which that does have the advantage of having your fellow who played Lupin the Third in it. This does not. But yeah, I quite enjoyed this. It's a weird thing where I think... if we're coming to pick out what would we send back in time to make our 8 to 11 year old self watch, I think this is the thing they'd enjoy the most. But
yeah,
today, it's the thing I enjoyed the least.
I'd like to go back to it just from nostalgia, but I think that I'm in the same boat as you. It's like, yeah, I think Kid Me would have, at the age this was, it was like, yeah, that's fucking perfect. That was exactly my jam. Because I remember watching this and going like, man, this is dark as fuck when it was on. Which it wasn't. But to me, as a younger person, I was like, this is dark. But yeah, not as much now. Now it would be the cute animal family stuff, and I'm just like, yeah, that's just me aging and maturing in the opposite fucking direction, I guess.
Yeah, it's I don't think I like the bug alien type enemies either. I know the thing with the other Tekkaman is there are other kidnapped humans. But I can't remember what the setup is, like whether the thing which has brought them has got a face, or whether it's just that sort of faceless 70s tokusatsu villain.
Yeah, just a bunch of like goons to
yeah
to get. yeah yeah
I was actually wondering, looking at it, when I saw the sequence, and they, like, I assume later on it will be elaborated on, the whole thing around the plants that the aliens put on the planet and grow. And I thought, I'm guessing that might be, maybe it won't, but I thought, I wondered if that would be a plot point later of what the purpose of that was. Because when I first watched it, I was like, oh, are these, like, plants going to turn into the bugs? Are we going to go full Monster Mind Jason Ward Warriors here? Like, they grow the villains. That's how they grow. They grow their army. And I thought that would be cool because, you know, I love that sort of stuff.
That's the thing which makes me think, as a younger person, I would have enjoyed it the most because, that stuff in Jason the World Warriors was absolutely fascinating and grotesque and grotesquely fascinating. And I think I would have found these monsters similarly so. And to say, I always like the continuing story stuff in general, which I guess the cyber formula GPX would have also had in spades, to the point where they'd have to go and find radio shows and go down the video store to rent videos to get even more of it. The Japanese Wikipedia page is quite the thing for that show in terms of laying out the continuity. It's like where can you find each of these races from each of these years? It's seven of these are in a radio show, but the eighth one's in a video game.
I was going to say, like, sometimes I like stuff like that, but when it is something you get into, and it's like you then discover, oh, if you want to know all the lore, you've got to look at all this media. It's like, if you want the full lore experience, you've got to play this game. You've got to look at that radio drama. It's just,
I played Kingdom Hearts 1. I played Kingdom Hearts 2. I have not played Kingdom Hearts 3 because I have no idea how many fucking games I have to play in between those.
You did better than I did. I played Kingdom Hearts 1. I saw 2 and was thinking of getting it. And then I seemed to have... It felt like, to me, like they released... I don't know, 8 sequels over the space of 5 years. It was a lot longer because I forget just how long it was between 2 and 3. But I was looking, and then the thing that also put me off was all the ridiculously, in my head, pretentious names like Birth by Sleep and 365
Point
Dream
One
Drop.
Days
like,
or something.
Like
yeah.
Dream Drop. And, like, was it 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue? And I'm like, is it the final chapter or the prologue? Or is it the prologue?
It's like when you're naming...
And I'm just like, it sounds so confusing. Like, I thought, is that a literal translation? Is that a bad translation? Or is that... Like, I was confused. So I was like...
I feel like that's when you're when you're making something, you're just like, okay, this is X version final, like .txt. And it's just very lazily writing it,
It reminds me of the gag in the Steins Gate franchise where all of the gadgets have ridiculous names because they were like, when they ask the guy that invents them, the big guy, I forget his name now, and he's like, they're like, oh, so this is like version 3.457. Like, how many of these have you made? He goes, well, actually, this is the first one, but I didn't want to just put version 1, that's boring, so I put, like, you know, elongate number, because it sounds cooler, it makes
it
sound
prestige.
Like I've done, like, lots of modifications and revisions, but I definitely enjoyed this, but I think for me, of the three, knowing what I was like as a kid, knowing that, you know, 10-year-old me, you're talking prime time, loving Transformers, Jason the Ward Warriors, anything like that, this would have been something I would have sent back, because there wasn't also, to my mind, there's nothing that I can think of that's similar to this that would have been on terrestrial TV when I was that age. Yeah. So it would have actually been unique as well in that regard, because I wouldn't have watched, I don't think I properly got into anime outside of the stuff I watched as a kid, not knowing it was anime. I don't think I properly got into anime until it would have been a couple of years later when I first watched, like, Akira, and then started basically buying all the VHS tapes that Manga Entertainment put out based purely on the synopsis on the box and which one had the best look, which one had the best looking front cover, like Tower Records. Look at that front cover. Bubblegum Cry. Oh, look at those mechs. I'm having that. And that was literally how I did it. And sometimes it worked and I bought things like Slayers and I bought Bubblegum Crisis. Other times it didn't, because I bought like New Gal Force and watched it and was like, this is awful. And then I still bought New Gal Force and I was like, wow, this is no better. This show I would have totally sent back, and I'm pretty sure 10-year-old me would have absolutely loved it.
Righty ho. Let's wrap this thing up. Anything to plug, Dwayne?
I'm on Twitter at @I_M_D. I mostly like and retweet shit and put pictures of food that I have done that I think looks pretty. I also do a podcast with my friend Niall Flanagan at Secret of the Sailor Madness.
Yeah, Harry, anything you want to plug?
You can find me on Twitter under my real name because my old name famously got stolen. And my gamer tag, which is the online handle I normally use, is Chidamaru, spelled with a C-H-I, not a K-Y.
Okie doke.
Or K-H-Y.
You can find me on Twitter at @awesome_engine, and you can also find the podcast I do with Niall and Dwayne at dynamiteinthebrain.com. But if you want to see our beautiful faces when we record it, assuming that YouTube doesn't do weird things and only record 4 seconds of it, you can go to YouTube and the Let's Go JoJo Show channel, where you'll find the episodes we've recorded and any new episodes when they're live streamed. So, yeah, if you want to go and see an assortment of beards.
I feel like that's like one of the, at least for 50% of the population, that's the COVID haircut, right?
It is, yes. Of course, now.
Oh, I love it. Look at this. Oh, wait, the people at home can't.
No, we've got our video on, but we're not streaming, so we're just looking at each other's beards. They will have to remain a secret for you, dear listeners.
There's pictures of us on social media. Go.
The irony will really be want. That I'll have probably shaved my beard off by the time you hear this, because they all have gotten annoyed with it.
Yeah,
there we go. Won't. We'll be back with another one of these next month. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye.